Thank you. So, all right, we have a good crowd tonight. Let's see if we, first of all, have a quorum. We have, it looks like we do, Dr. Potts, Joel Thompson, Rachel Strife, and me. Rachel was joining late, but I see she's here. Thank you for being on time. And I know Rachel has some exciting news to report today. We'll come back to that. I hope that Summer will be joining us shortly.
I'm here, Holly.
Oh, hey, there you are. Where are you hiding? There you are. Great. Thank you. Okay. Let's begin. We'll call the meeting to order with the quorum having been established. And we have a potential member present, and that's Sonia Swamba. Hello, how are you? We've distributed your curriculum vitae, resume, whatever the term you want to use is. And we look forward to you joining us for two more meetings and checking us out. Tell us a little bit about yourself, if you could.
Hi, good evening. Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to having the opportunity to serve and join the group. I moved to Arizona a couple of years ago. I have a son who has schizophrenia, and he's been in various hospitals. And I met Rachel, and she told me about the opportunities and ways to serve, and that's why I submitted my resume.
Excellent. Is your son living in the community now? Is he in a hospital now, if we can ask?
You can. I'm a lucky person. He's doing really, really well. He lives at home now. He is doing really well.
Oh, well, we're grateful for that. And I know it's due in no small measure to have a dedicated support person in the form of a mom. And so wonderful. I know you bring insight and lived experience, and no doubt will complement, deepen, widen our expertise on this committee. So I'm just delighted you're here. And thank you, Ms. Strife, for recruiting and identifying folks with so much to give to the community. So we look forward to having you here. We have others. We've also had one other resume, and Katie Williams is intending to join. She has one more meeting, but she's had a really, there have been lots of transitions in the City of Phoenix Municipal Court and in the Mental Health Court and the Homeless Court. She has responsibilities in both, and new person in the PD position that she works with. So there's been a lot of change, not to mention she had her fifth child about a few months ago. So obviously this is a busy lady, but she is going to be joining us. And we have one other person who is submitting her resume. And I'll be so happy because she is a peer and has had a remarkable journey and very deep experience in the community behavioral health system, adult protective services system, Arizona State Hospital. And so she'll be bringing a great deal. And I believe we'll have her resume for consideration at the December meeting. With that, is Matt Moody on? I don't see.
Yeah, Pam.
Maybe he'll be on shortly.
He's on, Ms. Diesel.
Oh, where?
Can you hear me?
He's on via phone.
Oh, okay. Hi, Matt. All right, great. I wanted to establish that you were here as well. Okay.
I have a question. I have my hand up.
Oh.
Ms. Giesel, Ms. Slomba, is your, just welcome and thanks. Is your son SMI?
Yes, he is.
Okay, because that's important because of the criteria. Thank you.
So let's go. We have community partners on. Let's see, there's Joe. Could Joe, you want to give us an update?
Hi, everyone. Joe Kautzman. I'm with Banner Health Plan. I have no updates at this time. Thank you, Holly.
Sure. Let's see who's, let's see if I can go down here. Michelle.
Hi, my name is Michelle Rademacher. I'm with the Division of Developmental Disabilities. I'm an IOC liaison for DDD's committees. Currently, I did not come prepared with an update tonight, but I'd be happy to take anything back if you have questions or need me to take anything back.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for taking time and being here. Your presence is what's important mostly, because we never know when we're going to generate some other other communication, that it's good to have you here. Tyson Gillespie, anything from you?
Tyson Gillespie from Mercy Care's OIFA team. Just a couple of things I want to make sure the committee were aware of. Mercy Care's OIFA team is hosting a lunch and learn beginning of December, and I'll drop information on the chat, where one of the peer run organizations and our justice team are talking about the benefits of peers for forensically involved members. That's at the beginning of December. And we also have finalized the dates for our annual Connections Conference, which is targeting members of the REBA system to come and learn and be able to engage around self-care and learn more about evidence-based practices within the central part of the state. Those dates are April, and I get this wrong every single time I say it, so let me just make sure I'm telling the right dates. It is April 17th and 18th. And once we have registration and those things up, I will make sure I share it out, Holly, with the committee. Would love if anybody from the IOC would like to attend, that you could attend, or if you have individuals, loved ones, or folks that you feel would benefit attending. Last year, we really did a focus of that it's member-driven both days. There are sometimes providers that also attend, and we encourage that, but really want it to be for members to know about resources and evidence-based practices. And so we're excited. We'll probably, by the time your next committee meeting, I'll be able to share the link for registration. But those dates are set. We are aware that that Friday is Good Friday. So it is a half day. That way, if folks have obligations, that they're able to do that in the afternoon. But those are our two updates, and I will drop the link for our lunch and learn in the chat. So if anybody wants to attend or wants to send anyone to that, it's open to the community.
Thank you. I'm on the Mercy OIFA mailing list, and I did get that. That's a great mailing list. If members of the committee are not involved, you can just on that list. It's very, they cover timely events, so you may want to get on there. Rachel, is anybody from Mad Moms, if you know, planning to attend that, or will you guys cover a lot of these?
So I need to get the information and get it out, because I didn't know about these things. So it sounds like there's a family one. So Tyson, there's a family, an OIFA event. Is that the one you're talking about, or are you talking about in April?
So the Connections Conference is facilitated by OIFA, but the lunch and learn in December is an OIFA lunch and learn, and I'll drop that information in the chat, Rachel, and please feel to share that for members and providers.
I'll share that with the mom group.
I think it's particularly, Rachel, that's a one that you guys are interested in, because it is focused on peer involvement in justice teams. But Tyson, is that ACT teams only, or is it crisis intervention teams?
Really anybody that that is could benefit from forensic peer support. We do have our justice team from MercyCare presenting for a portion of it, and then one of our peer runs, Hope Libs, that does a lot of embedded court peers, is also presenting.
Okay. Tyson, would it be possible to get the two Mercy teams, the justice, the forensic team and the embedded court team, to tell us a bit, come and talk to the Central IOC and share with us what those teams do, just do a presentation?
I will talk to our justice administrator and see when they're available.
Great.
And probably would be the beginning of next year, Holly. I'm not sure if the committee would be meeting in December, but it'd probably be sometime next year.
Yeah, so. Next year, early. There's no rush. I just know that we do get questions, sometimes complaints about people that, where it really arises out of a question about a justice issue. And I think that would be good if the committee knew how to look at those things a little better.
And would always be happy if there's ever questions or issues that come up that the committee could reach out to me, and I'll get our justice folks to give us answers or to help follow up for anything that the committee hears.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Okay.
You know, Holly, it's summer. I would think it'd be really important. I mean, it'd be great if we could have the justice team come and speak, because I guarantee probably 90 to 95% of families that have a loved one that end up in the jails or even the prison system have no idea that a MercyCare justice team even exists.
Yep. I think that's probably
and the services
right.
that MercyCare should be providing to their loved one to coordinate an appropriate release plan.
That, Summer, that's very important. Thank you for focusing things. I think from the IOC standpoint, and Dr. Potts is probably the, I don't want to make Dr. Potts seem elderly, but you've probably been involved in release planning and SMI issues in the jail longer than any other practicing psychiatrist in Arizona. I think it would be interesting to see from a human rights standpoint, from the IOC's view, what is going on in release planning and IOC issues upon release from the jails. We don't have jurisdiction in the jails, but how do we oversee what happens when a release is occurring? So I think that would be interesting to hear about. And Summer, thank you for focusing on that. That release planning issue really is kind of the heart of the matter, isn't it?
Oh yeah, big time. It can either be the greatest thing in the world or the most epic failure when you don't have one. And I think it's really important that we let these families know the options that are available to them and what to ask for and maybe even demand, because that information isn't always just freely given to families.
Interesting. So it's the knowledge and then it's follow-up.
And coordinating with the clinics, ensuring that everyone is talking to each other.
And it's certainly difficult for someone in jail,
sure,
whether they're to manage that. There's better communication now with tablets and so forth, but the person may not be able without support to do that, particularly if they're having to deal with, are they going out on a bond? Are they going out on court order treatment? Do they need court order treatment? So all of those are things to think about. And we do have a new sheriff. And so there's a new sheriff in town. So we can somehow link some of these activities to this particular sheriff's plans for or lack of plans, policies or lack thereof on how he's going to handle SMI issues at release. So I think that will be a good topic for us to think about next year. And Tyson, thank you for triggering us to, and I mean that word in the right way, to think about the justice involvement, particularly of people coming out of jail. So good. All right. We will mark that for follow-up. Rachel, can you tell us of where you've been? Rachel's been in Maryland, as we say in the South, but she's been at the FDA testifying on some remarkable stuff. Yeah. So tell us what you and Mad Moms have been doing.
Yeah, thank you. There's a sister group parent group, if you will, of Arizona Mad Moms called the Angry Moms. And that group is has been focused significantly on access to clozapine, which is an antipsychotic that's really important in the treatment of, it has two FDA indications. One is for treatment-resistant schizophrenia, and the other is for reducing recurrent suicidal behaviors. And it's the only medication that has an FDA indication to prevent suicide in schizophrenia and schizoaffective disorder. So a pretty important medicine. It's had, since it was first released in US markets, it's had a large barrier to obtaining it. And so only 5% of people who have are indicated for clozapine or less have access to the drug, because not only is there frequent blood testing required as part of the clozapine product label, a weekly blood test initially, and then it becomes less frequent, but it's essentially monthly forever. But the FDA had an added layer of really strict bureaucracy where they had implemented a blood for drug program that would ration pills in weekly quantities to patients. a number of us have been pressuring the FDA on this issue for years. And finally, we got a joint committee hearing of the Psychopharmacological Drugs Advisory Committee and the Drug Risk Advisory Committee. So it's very rare to have two committees of the FDA have a joint hearing. But I think what was unprecedented and has never before happened in history was that individuals themselves with schizophrenia, treatment-resistant or suicidal problems that are on clozapine, testified on a national level that was nationally broadcast. Incredibly brave testimony on behalf of those individuals. In addition to that, our own Lisa Castellanos testified. Her son was restored to competency on clozapine, and then the prison didn't carry it. And so instead of getting to a 10-year parole date with options, he will probably be in prison for the rest of his life because of the behaviors associated with not having treatment for his illness. Crystal Fox testified as a nurse for decades over at the state hospital on the use of clozapine, and then, of course, her family not having access to good medicines, specifically for suicidal and aggressive and homicidal symptoms. And of course, her family suffered both of those things. Very powerful testimony. Also, Kristen White, whose brother died of suicide, was there. She testified. and Frances Musgrove, another mom, testified from Arizona. And then a really great contribution from Janina Rotaru, who is a nurse ACT team nurse practitioner here for COPA. She also testified. Jane Jepson, another Arizona Mad Mom. She testified as well. Very powerful nationally broadcasted testimony. And at the end of the testimony, the two committees voted 14-1 to end the clozapine REMS as their recommendation to the advisory committee. It was quite a large panel with doctors and researchers And it was a long day. FDA testified. The industry experts testified. The REMS agency and their affiliates testified. And we there's been quite a few news releases coming out. This was just happened yesterday. But we have great hope that that the management of patients will be transitioned from a bureaucratic government agency to the doctors who are treating them, which is where the management of patients belongs. So that's wonderful. Hopeful that that'll happen in the next 3 to 6 months, but the FDA needs to act based on the advisory committee recommendations. So
that is wonderful. Thank you. Could I ask you to post, if you could get to Larry, and Larry can post the YouTube link on the IOC page.
Yeah.
I think that's incredibly important. And I appreciate you as a member of the IOC, that work, and also for being able to be on since you just got back.
Yeah.
And thank you for making that a priority. So I would love to have that. And Larry, if you could also maybe send that link to the other IOCs, including ASH. I just think that's so important for when Arizona is right up there at the FDA changing things that are of real importance to what the IOC exists to deal with, which is oversight of the services that members are getting. And the REMS was certainly an obstacle to that in some instances, I think. So that would be good. On a related note, I've had some inquiries just from various people, moms, and some people who called with, contacted me with what I thought was a complaint and turned out really to be questions, very good questions, about what a particular diagnosis means. What is the difference in schizophrenia and schizoaffective disorder? Can you have schizophrenia and bipolar at the same time? What does that mean? What is bipolar? So it occurred to me that as we, this relates, I think, to questions I've had when I go out on a site visit and you see patients with particular diagnoses, and I'm not even really sure sometimes what it means. I'm not suggesting that we need to become clinicians. What I'm wondering is, Dr. Potts, could you help us out, or do you have somebody you'd want to invite to help us out as lay people on the IOC, probably invite some of the other IOCs to join? You know, what are the, how are you diagnosed with, say, the 6 or 7 common psychiatric diseases that lead up to eligibility for SMI designation? Obviously, the disease then has to also affect your daily functioning. But what is schizophrenia? What are the signs, the symptoms? What leads a clinician to think about that as the diagnosis? And the same with the other, I think there are 6 or 7 major diagnoses. What do you think about that? Or is that something we're never going to become knowledgeable enough about for it to matter?
Number one, if you have family, you can always drug them to me and I'll talk to them for a few minutes about diagnosis. I do that all the time. Number two, I don't think we should be in the role of talking about those issues. I think that's something that the clinician should, and we should do that. But number three, I do it always, and the nomenclature changes as the moms know. Schizophrenia spectrum disorder now, so you could have schizoaffective type. So things change over time. And I tell families all the time that we don't biopsy the brain, not much anymore, at least. And that's probably why we don't have the clarity of diagnosis and the more spectrum then they are discrete. In other areas, they're discrete. But in some of these, it's more of a spectrum. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I can gladly talk to the committee in 10, 15 minutes if we wish me to do so. Also, I think Matthew has experience in SMI enrollment and meeting some of the other functional criteria for SMI status. So that would be a second component, because SMI isn't just diagnostically based, is my understanding.
Right.
But you know, if we want to do it in-house, or if we want to have an annual meeting, I'd be glad, you know, when we have an annual meeting for the other three, you know, that's something that I easily can speak to. But again, if any of you have family members or other people, just say, hey, I'm a little confused. I'm willing to, you know, I'm not going to argue one way or the other about what medicine the person should be on, but there's fairly simple criteria, but there's a lot of overlap.
Okay. Great. We will try to figure out a way to schedule something after the first of the year and get offer that to some of the other, to all of the other IOCs to join us for 15 or 20 minutes at the beginning of our meeting. I think it would be helpful. And thank you. I encouraged these people to clarify these calls, to clarify with their clinical team, with the psychiatrist, and to make sure that they're getting to see a psychiatrist. That's the problem. Everybody's seeing nurse practitioners as the provider, which is great, but you would like to think that particularly for the most seriously ill, that there is more psychiatric involvement. I'm not seeing it, however, so that's something we can also think about. Let's focus on did anybody do IAD reviews? Summer's usually our IAD queen. Did you have an opportunity to do any?
Hi, Holly. Yeah, I did. You know, I mean, surprisingly, the ones that I viewed, it seemed to be a little bit of a quiet month, which I'm grateful for. The IAD seemed to be pretty reasonable. There was just one that it would be more of like a soft inquiry to make sure that the members' requests and wants and needs are at the very least being considered and looked at in regards to being able to change their housing situation. So I'm planning on doing an inquiry for that.
What are the facts briefly?
The facts are that her fellow roommates and fellow neighbors are threatening her racial slurs. Just seems to be a very toxic type environment for this member and feels unsafe.
Wow. Toxic slurs. Is she in, she's in a birth or in a group home?
No,
or?
She has a voucher, a housing voucher.
Okay. And does she's sharing a house, or she's in her own apartment? What's the setup?
And that's one of the things I'm going to ask for more clarification. From reading, it appears as though she's in a shared type of situation, maybe shared apartment, shared room type of deal.
That's very sad and very frightening, because if it becomes, if it escalates, somebody's going to get arrested for domestic violence. And
correct.
Then, because it's not based on relationship, it's based on where you live. So that could be.
It just seems she's very fearful. Reading the IAD, it just really appears that she's fearful and feels unsafe in her current living situation. There's multiple reports of things that are going on that are concerning.
Well, should we do a site visit?
I mean, I think that would be great, to get eyes, because I know, sometimes you never know the when you, it's one thing to read it and it's another thing to see it. I guess that's the best way to describe it. But obviously I want to ensure that the members complaints are being addressed and looked at. I think, you know, it's really valid. It's a really good thing to validate, you know, their concerns.
Yeah. And while honoring the confidentiality too. So we have to make sure that's done. Dr. Potts, you had a question or a comment.
Yeah, a couple of things. Number one, I'm dealing with that in a case in Yavapai County. The issue is, however, this person has not been on the medications and they're increasingly paranoid and not realistically so. So one always has to look at that issue from complaints. Number two, if it's a private residence, if it's not a BRF, we do not have the authority to go and look at it. So if it's in a BRF, that's one thing. If it's maybe in a supportive housing, an apartment, that's a different issue. So I think you're going about it right. So I'm ready to say, hey, you know, I would ask, had they changed residence? Because they may be changing residence every 5 months. So, you know, I think those are things to look at and see what they're doing on that to address her concerns, 100% right. But I have seen so much of it also where it's part of the illness.
Correct. Anyway. And that was my inquiry. It's worth the time to inquire about, you know, absolutely, is it the illness or is this a true situation, a terrible situation for the member?
Absolutely.
I have a quick question. So are a lot of the housing vouchers being used in like certain apartment complexes maybe that it would be within our scope to like just go look at the complexes where folks are living? I mean, are they in, you know?
We've done that before, Rachel. We have gone to some of these places, the Section 8 or other part, there's some actually buildings that we've been to where almost 90% are that. So we can go there and look at it and then have people volunteer, et cetera. But yeah, of course we can.
And I think we can, if what Dr. Potts is talking about, if it's a private residence, let's say someone there's a house and they have a room and they have someone living there who's SMI and who's placed there either by the clinic or just is there because maybe it's an aunt, maybe it's parents. Then we don't have jurisdiction, but I got to pull the statute and look at it. I hope we have jurisdiction to go where the HUD or the community living placement program has placed people. I think
I don't think so, Holly, but I think it's worth checking. But again, I would have a real problem going into someone's private residence without being invited. I think the state licensed one is different. A private residence, that's a bright line that,
sure,
whatever. Good point. Good looking. You look into it, I know. Yeah.
And I do think we can go in a housing complex, in an apartment complex, something like that. We can sort of check it out. I did have another call from a family who had gotten a placement for their son in an apartment complex. The apartment complex was through the clinic. The apartment complex was brand new renovated, but was in and this is like the third one I've had since summer. I know Rachel's familiar with one of the incidents, but I've had two more. The complexes were in areas of town. I drove to both, not far from where I sit right now, but in an area of town where I, in one instance, stopped, turned around, and went back the other way. It was in no way a safe area. The other one I did drive all the way down, but while this, in both instances, the buildings, one was a small, like quad, around a little courtyard, four units or six units around a courtyard. The other was kind of a mid-rise. And in both instances, I am sort of horrified that somebody, you know, vulnerable folks are being in these areas because they are, I think, at risk of being targeted. And it was disturbing. So I had that down as something to talk about how as a committee, when we go out and we do site visits, how do we record these experiences where we say, well, you know, the place is great, they had programming, the member was happy, etc., but the surrounding neighborhood is concerning to us. Is that a concern? Is that something we can think about as a human rights issue? Or do we just say that's out of our scope because it's up to the folks who run the housing programs? Anybody got thoughts? Dr. Potts?
Well, that's why our mandate is to have someone from housing on the committee. And that would be, it would help. And I think we can comment on it. But again, boy, it'd be kind of interesting to shut those down, have them shut down when then you have more homeless though, people out places. So the other thing is, what protections do they have for their clients in those neighborhoods? That might be a follow up to your, you know. But anyway, that's a good point.
Okay.
Rachel. I had a question because we have someone from the DDD IOC on our call. Yeah. I mean, there's been kind of an ongoing theme within Arizona Mad Moms about really looking at this parity between other types of disabilities and SMI disabilities, and in particular with supported housing, where DD has group homes and they shall provide a residence for individuals that need them. And what's happening with SMI, is DDD having challenges with having their folks being placed in bad parts of town or in dangerous circumstances? So I'm just curious how DDD is experiencing this housing crisis. How is it affecting you guys?
Hi, Rachel. DDD's administration, we do have a department that is the housing department. Unfortunately, I'm not a representative from that department. My experience in the past when I was a support coordinator, DDD helps individuals find accessible housing. And that is open to not just an individual that's eligible for our support and services, but it also includes their family members if they qualify. And there's been several site locations throughout the community here in Maricopa County, but I'm not familiar with the locations to know what the area, surrounding area is like currently. I could take that back and bring something to you, your committee, if you'd like.
I mean, it is a valid comparison, in my opinion. Question, when you say that with their families, are you saying like, so a mother who would be a caregiver or something like that also is provided or assistance with housing?
Yeah, it's a little bit like the, you know, the HUD program. There's mm-hmm. financial eligibility requirements, and also the four-hour program that we help support our members with housing. You know, it's kind of a dually, from what I understand, it's a dual application, so that yes, their support, their family can also, you know, be with them and supported in this environment.
But let me clarify, Michelle. My understanding too is a lot of your clients are with Altex. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so Altex then will also, some of the families will pay for 6 or 8 hours respite or care, and so that can help do things too, which we don't have the opportunity for the SMI. So that makes a difference. The other thing is their IOCs are not permitted to do random visits to the facilities, whereas we can. But that's why when we go to houses, sometimes a dual diagnosis, That's why we've in the past given feedback to their IOCs, but we have the advantage, as Holly was suggesting, of seeing some of these places, not just driving by, where we can get better input. But anyway, that's just some thoughts for you.
Summers.
I will say, if we're going to touch that the DDD side, you know, I'm the mother of two autistic children, and obviously they will remain in homes with me, but I have helped other families, and obviously having a sibling with SMI, I see the complete disparity between, they're both, you know, different, but not less, the two different populations, and the way that I am supported and the way that there's not questioning of my decisions for my children in comparison to my brother is astounding. It is absolutely astounding. There is this culture, you know, within the DDD system for vulnerable. I mean, one of my sons is an adult. The other one is about to be an adult, where he is. There is just like, you know what's best for your kid. We will be supportive. Where SMI, you need to take you get it. You know, it's pretty sad to see the difference that we're not, we're willing to place population in really bad locations.
You're breaking up a bit, Summer. Let me note, I was asking you, Summer, are you a guardian of either your brother or your children? Title 14 guardian?
I'm the guardian of my kiddo that's going to be 18 in January. We actually have our guardianship hearing on next Tuesday, or this Tuesday coming up, but I am the guardian of my 20-year-old and my brother.
Okay.
But even before my children, my one son became an adult, there was still, they recognize this person is so vulnerable. And I've seen other families that do not have guardianship of their severely disabled child that is within the ALTEC system. And they, the parents and or the loved one that is primarily caring for them, their opinions and their thoughts are always considered and always taken into account, because for whatever reason, they are very focused on not allowing that young adult to suffer.
Yeah, you're right. DDD, because of the nature of the beast, and almost by definition, the person is incapacitated and unable to make responsible decisions. I think in my experience, I do a lot of these. They have better transition programs. They have more effective programming, and we're not seeing that. And I think that's something the IOC needs to be looking at more carefully, is what the fiction of the births programs and the lack of programming, the de facto lack of programming. But I think the other answer to that is guardianship can make a difference. But I spoke to someone today who's a guardian, had no clue that they were supposed to be told their ward was in the hospital, had no clue that they were supposed to be told that they wanted to change medications, had no clue that they were not the person responsible for this SMA individual, for them getting the housing that the agency was. So again, part of that is you're an educated mother who's had the children all your life, but some of the SMI folks don't turn mentally ill until 18 and they don't have the experience of the system. But you're right, the system does not nurture education and learning as the DDD programs often do. You're 100% right on that, Summer.
I think this is such an important topic. And there is, I believe, likely to be legislation next year to try and improve parity of services between, among those who are qualified for ALTECs under current criteria, and which excludes qualification for ALTECs benefits if you are qualified solely by virtue of a diagnosis with a designation as SMI. And I always knew that there was this problem. I mean, at a kind of a cognitive level and intellectual level. But when I talked particularly to Summer, and then to another parent and who had a son with SMI and has a daughter with autism and other, some other issues, the difference in the services that are available for Summer's children versus her brother and the other mother's daughter versus son, it is a totally different universe. It's Venus and Mars, you know? And I don't understand why, other than maybe legislative budget priorities. I don't know why. But I think there will be legislation discussed next year, if not introduced, to try and bring some parity there. It will be interesting to see. And some of you are familiar with the housing setups for the DD population, I'm sure. I'm not, but can somebody share what those, are they similar to what we see at births? Are they similar to group homes where individuals living with SMI are placed? Or is there a great difference?
Oh God, no, Holly. Oh God, no, there's a huge difference, even down to just first appearance walking through the door of, you know, a DD Altex home versus a BHRF. It is just a completely different culture, just simply walking through the door. You can just tell, like I said, just walking through the door, that the DD home is so much better. Staff is a lot more qualified, it appears. There's really an emphasis on that the individual with, you know, with, you know, if it's autism or, you know, whatever the qualifying condition for the DD home may be, that they are supported. At least in my experience, I know that, you know, there can be different experiences for others. But just when I've accompanied some parents when looking for placement for their children within the DD system, and that they have options and that there's no pressure to accept a first placement that you walk into. It's a take your time. We want you to find the best fit for your loved one. So the transition is wonderful compared to the transition with individuals like my brother, where it's like, well, this is where you're going to go and you're going to like it, you know, or, you know, you get a lot of pushback on not accepting whatever you're given.
Can I make a point of order? Holly, you were going to have Ms. Rademacher maybe bring her housing person to a meeting. Maybe we can put this on the agenda because it's a long discussion that isn't on the agenda. And I think warrants that. And about, are there differences? What are they, you know, and the, what Altex offers, et cetera. Does that make sense?
It does. And I brought it up because of the questions about the quality of housing and so forth from the contacts that I've had. And I think that it's a good example for us to understand what do you expect to see as a matter of rights for DD in DD houses versus what we expect to see as a matter of right in the SMI houses.
And part of that, though, is DD by definition is a neurodevelopmental, possibly, probably long-term, lifelong, long-term care system. So they don't look at moving people out after 30 days, et cetera, et cetera. So right. You know, we need to look at some of those issues unless we want to start characterizing the SMI as never getting better.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm certainly not going to say that. That's why I ask about the diagnosis. Is schizophrenia a chronic disease? Is it curable?
No, it's a chronic disease. The amount of cures or remissions are minuscule. And by definition, and even back 150 years ago, it was dementia praecox and early dementia. So yes, it is a chronic brain disease, which is a deteriorating downhill course. But as as Rachel very well pointed out, there's some medicines that can stop some of the decline, can level people out, etc., but they still need to be on those medicines probably for their lifetime. So yeah, it is. And why should it be treated different than Altex treats other than other ones? Those are good questions. But yeah, it is.
Okay, great. All right. So we'll try to, I'm trying to get these clusters of focus and to help inform our analysis of not only our site visits, but also our IADs. So Summer, in follow-up, you're going to be reaching out to find out with the person you spoke with about her living situation and her vulnerability, where it is it something we can visit? And then we'll go from there, correct?
Correct.
All right, and we will continue a discussion, a focused discussion on why are Altex and SMI housing options and residential treatment options so different, seemingly so different. That may not be how we ultimately frame it, but that's how we'll leave it for now. Okay, we owe the state an annual report. And I want to run through and ask people, if you can, I have a skeleton draft. The annual reports from the IOCs vary from, the ASH report, which is lengthier and full of their visits to patients on campus, their phone interviews, their reviews of incident report of videos of incidents and so forth. They have a captive population, a population of, roughly 250, 300 people. So it's a very different, they don't have a database that they comb through. They don't pick sites to visit. It's one place. So the other IOCs have different approaches. I have a skeleton, but what I really need is some reflection or some recommendations on next year. Obviously, we need to, I think, increase our number and thoroughness of site visits and be more focused in what we are looking at. And tell me, those of you who've been on the committee and done some site visits, Rachel, for instance, do you think we know what we're looking for? Do we know what we're looking at? How can we improve that?
I think that has evolved a lot. I think as the year went on, especially some of the last site visits that I think you and Dr. Potts had gone on, mm-hmm. where we need to start asking the question about open BHRF beds. Are people leaving prematurely? If so, why? And this was, I think, a really important discussion that we had. And are they being amended? If they abscond as they should be, or what is the, if they're on court order treatment, especially, and some of the more in-depth questions that came to light over the course of the year, I think should be continued to be a big part of site visits. I think I like looking at the programming and making sure it's appropriate and so forth. But I think I'm concerned that we're placing very high acuity folks in BHRFs, and that we should be looking at how is that being responded to.
Okay. What's the response when they don't just choose to stay?
Right. And how, I believe it was your last site visit had all these open beds. Yeah. Meanwhile, 4,800 people are on a supported housing wait list. What the heck?
Let me suggest, I'm going to ask the committee now. I'm available 24th and 25th. Anyone want to go on a site visit?
The 24th and 25th of November.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyone want to go on a site visit?
I'll have to look. I think.
Let me suggest, all of the members are obligated to go on a site visit. We haven't had them. People aren't going. And I think, Holly, your point was well made. What questions? We won't know what questions to ask until we go and see what questions need to be asked. We cannot formulate the questions, nor should we, I believe, before we have our feet on the ground, because it's just all meta stuff then. I think there's some we can look at, you know, turnout and stuff like that. But yes, I think that's important. I'm available 24th. I'll go with anyone. You know, we'll go anywhere in the valley. We can find places to go. There are myriad places, and I've got names. I keep telling people, I'll go, you tell me one, I'll go with you. But we have to step up and do it. And I think your point was well made. On the report, so I think we need to have someone saying what visits we did make. And if you want, I can write that up. Do you have last year's report? I never saw a copy of last year's report.
We didn't do it last year, Dr. Potts.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, then I'm willing to do a section on the IADs, and Rachel and Summer can let me know on that. Great. I'm willing to do a section on site visits. Okay. Period.
Good.
Put it out there. I don't know what your skeleton looks like. I'm sorry, but I'm willing to do that.
I'm sorry, I cut you off.
I didn't see the skeleton, but I hope I'm not being presumptive in saying that those two areas need to be covered in the annual report.
No, that we should cover that as well as other activities. And I'm looking at next year and
what the report is due, isn't it? Larry, isn't the 23?
Dr. Potts, let me just do this, and we'll do it as a confession. We have some good Catholics on, so we'll do a confessional, and then everybody can invoke the Blessed Mother and do a forgiveness. We did not do one this year, and we are a month tardy this year. Last year, and we're a month tardy this year. That is on me. I'm happy to email Senator President Peterson, or the Speaker of the House, and say it's on me, and I just want to get it done and bring some focus, because I don't think it's going to work for a member or two members to spontaneously say, "Hey, I can go next Saturday, or I can go tomorrow." That's not working. So I'm looking for another way, and I'll talk to some folks on the committee. Maybe we assign months. Maybe we tried different ways in the past, but one of the features of this committee now is that in the past, we had folks who were retired and who had a lot of availability. Rachel works full-time, I work full-time, Summer works more than full-time, Joel works full-time, we're all working. That is a demographic shift in the committee.
We did schedule Fridays, a third Friday, a first Friday of the month was previously scheduled, and Matt can attest to that. And I think, Joel, that we said we will do that, and Josh said he would do that too. That didn't work when it was scheduled. People wouldn't go. I'm off it. Right. I'm off on Sunday and Monday because I don't know what else works. But I'm going to suggest maybe we can get a report out before January 1. And I think to miss 2 years in a row looks bad. And So I think we should get one done. I'm going to work on it and get something to you or the committee.
I think we can get it out by and vote on it in December. It doesn't have to be lengthy. We don't have the volume that Ash has, for instance, because it's a different population. It looks bad not to have done it last year. I don't want to do it again this year. We'll hopefully do that. And if you'll get me a quick write-up, you know, bullet points, I will incorporate it and then circulate it, and we can have it for review on at our December meeting. Does that make sense to the rest of the committee? Summer?
Yes.
Matt?
Yes.
Joel?
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Is Joel? Oh, there's Joel. I couldn't hear. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I just said that makes sense to me.
Okay, great. And Rachel, you were nodding your head, so I took it as yes. Okay, what are your ideas? How do we increase the participation? How do you guys want to do site visits? Do we want to end IADs? Do we want to set a target number of site visits? And Dr. Potts is asking, do we want to go this Sunday or Monday? My answer is I can't, but others. So what's the best way to do this? Do you want to have a buddy? Everybody has a buddy and you schedule your site visits and you commit to do one a month.
Oh, sorry, my bad. I was muted. Yeah, we had some subcommittees and then I had to step out of one of them because of time constraints with other priorities. We had subcommittees, but they didn't quite
solidify.
They didn't work.
Yeah.
And Josh wanted to do Fridays, but that didn't work. So I really think we've got to reflect on, as I said earlier, as members, on how do we want to accomplish site visits and the IAD reports.
Well, let's talk about site visits now. You've got to, I agree. What does Joel want to do? What does Matt want to do? Summer and Rachel, how do you want to do the site visits? Let's talk about it now. It's on the agenda. Let's not put it off another bloody month and then we'll have two visits a year. That's just my thought. And if we can't do it, then we need to, you know, metal.
We do need more people.
Yep. Well, that's not the issue. I'll bet how many we don't. Those who are here haven't gone on visits. Having five more is going to just say, well, gee, I didn't have to go. Someone else went. Mm-hmm. We have to go individually. We have to make that commitment.
I can't go Sunday, Monday, but
pick a day.
All right, let me pick a day.
Anil, Joel, what do you want to do? How do you want to have site visits? Your obligation to go on site visits.
It's a fair question. I don't have a good answer because I do work full time and then I have kid obligations on the weekends typically. So it does make it hard for me to find time to be able to go out and do those. But I understand the concern.
Yeah, but and that's part of the thing. And, you know, you can have some time off sometimes or, I work a lot.
Hey, Jack, is there a certain day of the week and time of day where we deciding was best for site visits?
I prefer to do them, and I'm not head of site committee anymore, but I prefer to do them sort of more impulsive. But that's when people retired could do that and say, hey, how's it look? But we chose Josh and Holly, and I think Matt even said, let's do Fridays at such and such. That didn't work then for a number of months. So, I'm willing to do it. Someone says, hey, look, I found I'm free this morning. Or we could even go like Veterans Day. You know, we have holidays.
I meant like in terms of a day of the week that's good to visit for the site.
And any day is good.
Any day is good, afternoon, morning, evening. Yep.
Usually it's better, but my experience is it really doesn't matter. Sometimes in the old days, the patients would be gone. But now, sometimes the weekend, not as much, but I think it really doesn't matter. We can go in the evening. We can go from 4 to 7, one or two visits. It doesn't take more than 2 hours to do that. We have the right to do that. And sometimes it's good to go when everyone's there sitting there bored watching TV or getting the meals. So there is that. And it's not a big commitment. And doing two or three a year is what each of us should do, not one a month. So it's like, this ain't no bloody commitment. Right. Anyway, I'm wondering what Summer thinks or, Matt.
And just for a second, Beth Parra has joined us. Hi, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
Good. We have an application for membership from Beth, and we're looking forward to seeing you at a couple more meetings. We like to have three meetings. And at the next meeting, I'd like you to tell folks about yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and in the meantime, listen in and see if you like the what we do.
Yeah, I'm thankful to be here, and I'm willing to help in any way. So,
good.
Yeah, thank you for the warm welcome.
Thank you Appreciate for joining it. Us.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, Matt, your thoughts? Anybody have additional thoughts? Do you want to reflect on this? And let's come back in December with a commitment as to how each of us are going to address site visits. Dr. Potts makes a good point. We should commit to do some. And right now, because of some uncertainty in cases, I can't in advance, but spontaneity is a good thing because that sometimes you find yourself, you thought something was going to happen in the afternoon and it doesn't. So maybe we can do that.
Yeah, that's a good point. We could have more than one model. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, some fit for
right.
some. And that's an excellent point. You know, so, and if we reach out and say, hey, I'm free next week or tomorrow, Wednesday, anyone around? If we are, fine. If not, but at least we're trying, you know, and keeping that as a priority. That's all. They're so valuable.
Maybe every agenda should have an item of choose 2 days.
What?
Maybe a standard agenda item should be to select 2 days for site visits in the next month.
Okay.
And so like then we could go right now and decide 2 days when we would do site visits and we could all.
Yeah, I think we should do that. Like
Beth, I'm sorry, Beth, I'm sorry. You're not allowed to participate unless you're a member in the discussion. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
We'll talk among ourselves.
Yeah.
When there's a public, when there's a option for an open public comment, then we'll reach out to the members of the public.
Okay.
And try and make it clear. When you're on the committee after three meetings and we vote you in, then you can share in the committee discussions.
Okay, I apologize.
That's okay. You are forgiven too.
Thank you.
So if anybody wants to look now in December, we can do that and try to pick some days.
So I was looking at the weekend of the 30th after Thanksgiving. If people are in town, I could do that week, weekend after Thanksgiving, the 30th or the 1st.
I'll do the 30th or 1st with you. You pick what you want.
Okay.
Unless you and I be in touch on that. And if other people want to join us, just.
And who's doing that? Rachel?
Yeah, me and Jack will do a site visit on the 30th or 1st.
Okay.
Anyone else interested?
That weekend doesn't work for me because I have out-of-state family in for the first time in a long time. But maybe Summer and I can get coordinated and do one. Let's see if we can in December as well. And then maybe, hey, Matt, could we get, maybe you and Joel could do a visit in December? Is that possible, or you want to do January?
Let me, I'll coordinate with Joel offline. We'll
okay.
find time.
All right, great. That's good. Good suggestion, Rachel. So we've got that. Those ironed out. And Summer's done a great job on IADs. I think we all need to be sure that we continue to do that. I think that the more we can do, the better, obviously. But we're picking up some good ones, some good IAD.
I think the IADs are really important, Holly, especially when if you see one that is especially alarming and then you look at that member's history, you click that little link there, and you can see if that person is having repeated IADs. That can be a really good indicator of maybe there is some type of lapse of appropriate care, and maybe a little bit more attention needs to be paid to that specific member, and inquiries about why do we keep seeing IADs. That could be an indicator of a failure of an appropriate treatment.
Yeah, I have another question on that. I don't know. Let's see who's still on. Larry, you're on. I don't know. Did Frederica hop off? I can't. She did say she had no report from Access. My question is there a way on the reports from in the portal to track by address? I haven't tried to do that. And member number is redacted, so we can't check by member number. Frederick says no address tracking. Okay, so here's my question. Summer makes a really good point. The IOC at ASH can ask for every incident and accident report, every IAD on a particular patient. They can ask for every IAD that involved a particular unit, which would mean 20 patients or 24 patients. So if ASH IOC can get every IAD for a unit, that's an address. Why can't we get IADs by address?
I believe we can, Holly. If you look on the drop-down list, you can then search by provider where the IAD is from. It will give you a list of the IADs from that provider. Now, it may be if it's one provider has 10 homes, Frederica can correct me on this, but if there's one provider with 10 homes, you don't know that. But you can look on the provider drop-down.
I understand.
And so that's the address. I mean, sometimes they don't put the address in the, because of protected PPI. That's why the address is often redacted, which bothers some, but we can still sometimes figure out what the place is. But you can do it by provider.
You can sort by provider. My question is very specific.
Address.
If the ASH IOC can ask for IADs on a particular patient, why can't we? If the ASH IAC can ask for, they know the address, they're all at ASH, but if they can ask for the IADs from a particular union, Sago, Pinion, Mojave, why can't we? So that's my question. And I guess I'd like, if the answer is because you're not ASH, I just want to know, because Summer makes a really good point. We look at IADs, but how many IADs would we have to look at out of all that exists before we could spot a trend in a particular provider or a particular location or for a particular patient? The answer is probably N minus 10. So I'm just trying to see, we need as a committee the ability to look for trends and to look for hot spots. The ASH IOC gets to look at video of incidents. Many houses have video of in their homes. We know that because we've seen it in criminal cases. So my question is, and it's a question for Nat for next year, I'd like to include it in the annual report. We need the ability, in my opinion, all the IOCs do, the community ones, to look at to look by IAD for trends that are much more specific than the current dropdown lets us do. We are, in my also in my opinion, the most affected, because if you are the IOC in Northern Arizona and you hear that there's a problem at a group home in Page Springs, it's not hard to figure that out. If you're in Southern Arizona and you hear that there is a problem in Safford, it's not hard to figure out what group home to go and site visit. I think our effectiveness is inherently undermined. I don't want to confuse what you were saying. Could you? Okay, yeah, I can tell you right now, and it'll be in the minutes, and I'll cut and paste it into a request. We would like to be able to search for IADs by location, specific address in the portal. And we would like to be able to search by specific address. That'll give the best thing. For now, if you guys want to be able to search, think about what, and maybe it's a question of doing more site visits, but what else do you want to be able to search by? Okay. Anything, Rachel, anybody have anything to add?
Yeah, I'd like to know how many people are doing IAD about it. How many people have done IAD on the committee in the last month? Reviews?
Well, I did, but I didn't get them from the portal. I got, I looked at 6 IADs that came to me directly, not by random selection. So I won't include those in our site visits. But,
I'm asking about familiarity with the portal, because right now I can drop down and find the provider and it lists all the IADs from that one provider, which is often one address. On there now. I did that just 2 minutes ago. We have a function almost identical to that. I don't know if we still have subcommittees. Maybe that subcommittee, but I was the chair of the IAD subcommittee. I think we should disband the theory of subcommittees because it's not working and we're not having that reporting. It's not going through the subcommittee chairs anymore. So as of now, you take me off of being a chair of that, because those things should come to me as a chair, is what we discussed previously with Matt and you and Josh, and then looking at it and present it. But if I think we have that, we may not need that function. We just need to be familiar with working with that portal before we ask for things that may in fact be there. That's my concern. I don't know if it's there.
All right. Well, here's an example. You and I went to a facility and we saw what we saw. Now, if I wanted to look at whether what we saw that day was unusual, or we didn't look at any IADs when we were there. If I wanted to go back and search by that address, I can't search by that address.
You can search by the name of the provider. Yes, you can.
But the provider was La Frontera.
No, I think they have it specifically from that site. It's from specifically from the site where the IAD was. I'm 99% sure of that. I think we could table this and come back and discuss this at a future meeting.
Okay.
Because we need to all of us go on the site, the portal, and get familiar with it and see what it does and doesn't do.
Yeah, and one of the things that made me ask this is two of the IADs that I got were from the facility that we visited, and they were horrible, where people walked out in the middle of the night. One was on COT, is just walked away. Nobody was notified. Nothing happened. And this is not, and I, so I'd like to be able to search by address. So we'll table it and then look. I also just was surprised in comparing the ASH annual report to the and their access to data and our access to data. It's just very different. They have a public meeting where patients can come and voice complaints. We have a bigger challenge to identify people in the community living in BRFs, no matter how much they might have to say and contribute, to get them access. So I'm sharing what I was impressed with when I looked at the IOC annual report and the robustness of the information that they have immediate access to. So that was the impetus for my question. Okay. Anything else? We can do public comment now. Beth, would you like to comment on anything?
I think you're muted, Beth.
Okay. No, I'm just, you know, I'm learning the rules and everything. I'm just glad to be here. And I would love the opportunity to go on a site visit. You know, I've had some issues in the past, as we all have with birth, my son did. So, you know, I am not afraid to say what needs to be said in a kind way and respectful. So I'm just glad to be considered as a part of this team. So, you know, I just want to learn more about it and exactly what it is we're looking for and when. So thank you for this opportunity.
Okay, wonderful. Last item before we adjourn, future members of the committee, we need to do some recruiting, get it up to a larger number, hopefully double digits. Among our priorities are criminal justice, law enforcement, housing, peers. We have, as I said, one peer coming on, special ed. I talked earlier today with Matt about a former criminal justice person. We can also have providers. They may or may not be voting in a voting role, but I think some providers could be happy. It could be useful, very useful. And by providers, I mean not Joel. I mean like COPA, Southwest, whatever. I have one person who is potentially interested, and will think about her. And I do have a social worker with the city of Phoenix who's interested, and that would be good. But we really, law enforcement, housing, peers, criminal justice, all those, and the best way to find a member is through a member, because we all have different spheres and different communities that we operate in. So please help out. Anything else? No? Okay. Thank you all. And we will we will be adjourned. Be sure look in your emails for a draft of the annual report and we'll anticipate voting on that in December at our December meeting, or we may circulate it in advance and ask for your corrections, and then we'll have a final and then vote on the final. That's probably the easiest way to do it. I don't want to try to edit it by committee, right?
Thank you for that. I move we adjourn.
Okay. Any second?
I second.
Thank you. We are adjourned. Thanks, Larry. Bye. Thank you, Frederica.
Bye, guys.
That wasn't anything bad.
What?
It was just like I grew. Hey, we killed it, kind of blah blah thing. It was not like they're pouting, doing anything. All good. How are you doing? Maybe you're not like answer that question yet.
It's fine. What makes them so rich?
I want dad to tell us.
Nobody knows what the hell that is.
Where did you come from? Did you know that the wars started over? They had all the money. How did they get all the money? They had all the gold, they had all the... And that's what Hitler wanted to fund his war. That's what fueled his anti-Semitic everything. So he could take everything away from them to fund the tanks, the machines, and everything.
You want to know how the Jews really got all their money?
Yeah, I do.
Yes, we do. In the early 1900s, nobody had the ability to loan money to people that had like less than exemplary credit.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jews stepped in and did that. Goldman and Sachs. You ever seen the pictures of the turn of the century in the 1900s, the guys with the stovepipe hats and shit like that? They had those hats, and they had all the loans that they made to these people in their hat. And they would pull them out, and they would look at them, and they would call them in when it was time to call them in. But they were the only lender that would lend to these people. That's how they start.
Oh my God.
Fuck. So they're loan sharks. Yeah, it's Shylock the money lender.
I mean, shady loan sharks at the top.
Yeah, I mean, they were just like, and their mantra is anything for a fee. That's the way it works. You want me to do something for you? I'm happy to do it.
It's going to cost you.
Yep.
And they were the one of the few people that. So, still, what mom is asking, how the fuck did they have the money to grant those loans? How did they get that money?
Yeah, exactly.
How did they have all the money?
Like, so they're
how the fuck did they have some money from the start? How did Hitler get jealous of the Jews? How did the Jews have all this money? How is that?
I don't want to.
Where they originally got it from, I can't tell you.
I know. Where did it come from?
Always been.
How do we not?
Top powers.
But how do we?
Always had some.
And it's so tiny. How do we?